This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Automattic, the small adapter that turns your clunker into a smarter, connected car. For more information on their brand new Automattic Pro, visit automattic.com/twit and enter the limited time offer code TWIT20 for $20 off the new device. Today on Know-How, buy, build, or upgrade a Surface Studio. Welcome to Know How. It's a Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I am Father Robert Ballester, the Digital Jesuit, and next to me is not my bro, Cranky Hippo. He is still out. He is still recovering. Cranky Hippo, we wish you a speedy recovery because we got all of CES to do together. But folks, I may not have a co-host today, but I've got an action-packed episode. We're going to be talking all about the service. You've seen it. Leo loves it. It's a beautiful, beautiful device. But we have a few suggested tweaks and maybe a way for you to build one with twice the performance for less than half the price. So let's get into it. Now, the Surface Studio was released to much fanfare, as Microsoft has become accustomed to doing over the last few years since something happened at the company, Satya Nadella. We were surprised. We didn't expect this. This did not leak out. So when we saw it, people said, look, this is what an Apple product looks like. It's beautiful. It's elegant. It's incredibly well designed. Everything from the immediately pairing devices. I mean, there is no Bluetooth rigmarole. You push the button and you're good to go. To this incredibly gorgeous screen. This is what a 4.5K screen that is just pixel perfect. It's so well balanced. To the touchscreen, to this incredible hinge. That as I do this, I'm going to really mess up the angle that we had for our cameras, that allows you to use it either as a drafting table or as a full-on desktop. I mean, this is one of these elegant solutions that only comes around every once in a while, and Microsoft really did their homework when they created this. Or did they? Let's find out what Leo Laporte has to say about the Surface Studio.
This is the new Surface Studio, and it's an all-in-one Microsoft's Ooh. First desktop computer. It's a pretty amazing computer. This is the camera. They call it a Hello camera, okay. And it's more than just a regular camera. It also does kind of like the Kinect on the Xbox. It does a Z and it does infrared. So let me do it again. Now watch because it's pretty quick. Getting ready, looking for you. Make sure it's you. Hi, I'm logged in. So this is a ridiculously priced computer. It starts at $3,000. There's models going all the way up to $4,000. This is the base model, $3,000. And you see the computer's in here. So really effectively, this is a laptop. On the back, it's got four USB ports, the old Type-A ports, but they're USB.
Is that good for you or bad? 3.0. People complain about USB-C and USB-A.
I would love to see one USB-C. Okay. What Microsoft says is they designed this 3 years ago.
Okay.
And so this is that's not an excuse to me. You're selling it this year, not in 2013.
Yeah.
It has an Ethernet jack, another kind of anomalous.
I don't know what those are.
Yeah, what is that?
I don't know idea.
Gigabit Ethernet. This is the power cable, the only wire that you have to have. And then this is mini display port, and we're using that for the second display coming out.
What's that big gap at the back?
This thing?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. I thought it was a Kensington security slot. No, it's an SD card reader.
I don't know what that is anymore either.
Well, what? And finally, oh my God, a headphone jack.
Oh, wow.
Wow. So that's what you get. It's kind of a laptop computer inside an i5, 8 gigabytes of RAM. I tell you, the biggest disappointment to me is it's a 1 terabyte drive, but it's a 5,400 RPM spinning drive. It's a hybrid, though. That's an Intel specification with a 64 gig SSD that speeds it up a little bit, but not a lot.
So it's like a small cache.
It also has a mobile NVIDIA graphics processor.
It's like a laptop, right? It's like a laptop mounted with a big display.
That's basically what it is. What you're paying for is this. This is the display. 28 inches. It's a 4,500 by 3,000. That's a 4K display. And then this is the thing I really like.
That hinge.
And this arm is really well designed. You can position it at any angle, all the way down to 20 degrees, which makes this kind of like a drafting table.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what makes this most interesting. They're aiming at the creative crowd.
The color looks fantastic.
It's a P3.
Color gamut.
Wide color gamut, although you have sRGB available as well. It has the pen, the same pen that Microsoft ships with the Surface Pro and the Surface Book. It's kind of a fun pen because it has In fact, I can show you. I'll show it off right now. It has an eraser on the top. You can click. Single click for me. I've set it up to open OneNote. Double click will allow me to draw on the screen. This is the thing that's really weird. Now, when they sold me this, it was a special offer, and now it has ended. It was through December 1st. They threw in the $100 dial, they call it. And the dial's interesting. It can sit on the screen. If I press and hold it, I can actually use the screen to set what the dial does. In this case, there's not a whole lot it can do. It's either set the volume or make it brighter.
If you put it on the outside, does it change the eye color?
That would be kind of cool, wouldn't it? But no. The bottom comes off very easily. It's just a magnet, and it has two AAA batteries, and it pairs via Bluetooth. What they anticipate, and by the way, the touch is great.
We were playing with Big Macs forever. I can do all of this.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a nat. Oh, I got to use two fingers if I want to move it. But let's okay, so I drew on this drawing. Let's see what I can do to undo it. I think the premise is that you would be drawing with one hand, and as you're drawing, you could do other things. By the way, I could pick a palette on this. I could pick zoom. So you can have different things you could do. A lot of times these new UIs, maybe they're gimmicky. Maybe we just haven't played with them long enough. But the jury's still out, if you ask me. And I'm not the guy for this. However, I have to say, I've been using it on the show, and I really love this. I feel like this is a very natural way to interact with your screen. I'm not so much for drawing. Let me close Sketchable out. But even for things like browsing, you know, I can scroll around. I can zoom in on a website. I'm in Chrome here. I can play with it.
It's like Minority Report.
Yeah. I really love the natural way of interacting with it. Here's our Christmas card. And if I go into... So this is normal Lightroom. If I tap here, now I'm in the touch mode Lightroom, which is very much like Lightroom for the tablet. You know, it puts the controls down at the bottom. It's not how I'm used to working with Lightroom, but I could. I mean, the fact that I can zoom in but you see, it's a little bit slow. Now, I don't know if this is because Lightroom isn't
or
tuned
that
for
that
this,
i5.
Or that the i5 plus 8 gigs of RAM and the slow hard drive. But,
or the GPU.
It could be a lot of things, you know. So I'm not convinced that the low end, the basic model, is going to be enough horsepower for people who are real
professionals. The ones that are really tuned for the computer, that are writing to the metal, have phenomenal performance, and like things like Chrome kind of just sit there and suck battery.
Yeah, Chrome is notorious for that. I'll tell you, all in all, it's overpriced, it's underpowered, and it's still the most exciting computer I've used in years.
Goodness.
Our artist, Svetlana Shamakova.
I think she likes it.
She is the author of many beautiful graphic novels for young adults, like Awkward and Brave, which has just come out. And this has taken her half an hour.
Yeah, real time.
It's neat. I asked her. She said palm rejection is very good. She'd had a problem earlier, but it's been doing a great job. And I said, would you prefer to do this or use real media? She says, oh, my goodness. I prefer. Yeah. I make a mistake. I just turn the dial.
No more cutting and putting paper over it.
Unlimited undo is a blessing. What a beautiful.
No more tracing paper.
What a beautiful painting.
So as you can see, there is a definite audience for the Surface Studio, mostly creative professionals. It may lack a little bit in horsepower, again, because this is a design from 3 years ago, but, I mean, the elegance and the overall functionality and the fact that they paid attention to the details that creative professionals would want, well, it really bodes well for the future of Microsoft's hardware endeavors. Now, we will be doing a segment at the end of the show where we're going to address some of the concerns that Leo Laporte had. Specifically, he was not impressed with the hybrid setup. Remember, they used that 1 terabyte 5400 rotating drive along with an M.2 cache. It's an elegant solution, but it was really designed for a time when flash drives were ridiculously expensive. I mean, like $1,000 for 64 gigs. Now that they've come down in price, a lot of us are saying, why would you cripple such a beautiful computer with such lame sub-storage systems? Well, we'll get to that in a bit. Also, we're going to talk about this. This is not a Surface Studio, but it's kind of like a Surface Studio. In fact, we've had Surface Studio-like solutions for more than 3 years. We looked at one, an Acer all-in-one, 3 years ago when we were back in the old studio. I'm going to show you how you could build a computer that has twice the power of Leo's Surface for about half the price. But before we do that, let's go ahead and thank the sponsor of this episode of Know How. Now, folks, you have smart devices, right? Your phone is smart. Your computer is smart. Your house is probably smart. So why does your car lag behind when it comes to the smarts department? I mean, most of us drive okay cars. I mean, they're nice cars. They've really improved over the last couple of years. But unless you've bought something in the last 2 or 3 years, your car probably doesn't have all the electronics that you want. It doesn't have that beautiful screen in the middle. It doesn't have the way to gather metrics. It doesn't have a way to tell you how you're driving and how you can be more efficient. That's why you need automatic. Automatic is the best way to turn your old clunker into a smart car. Now, they've launched their brand new Automatic Pro, which is a new unlimited 3G car adapter with no monthly fees or subscription. The way that all automatics work is that they plug into your onboard data port. It's right underneath your dashboard. Normally, they use it for diagnostics or to figure out why that little check engine light has come on. But in this particular case, it's communicating with your onboard computer network. It's finding out how the engine is working. It's finding out how are you driving. It's finding out are you braking too hard, and then collects all that information so you can make an informed decision about how you drive and, what exactly you want out of your performance vehicle. Now, because the new version is 3G, it means that you'll always know where your car is at any time. It can track your vehicle even when you're not with it. It works with IFTTT, which means you get endless customization. You could have your car warn you when the oil is getting low. You could have your car tell you where it is. You could even integrate it with Alexa so you can say, hey, Alexa, oh, I'm sorry about that, where's my car? And it will answer you back with an automatic skill. You can even link your car to a Nest thermostat and have it, do an IFTTT so when you get close enough to home, it sets your preferences just the way you like them. Folks, it's not just a way to get information out of your car. It's a way to get your car into your digital life. It works with nearly every car made after 1996 and takes just minutes to connect to your iPhone, your Android device via Bluetooth. Plus, it integrates with the Apple Watch and the Pebble. If you are looking for the best accessory you can get for your vehicle, why not give your vehicle a brain worthy of your digital life? Right now, the Automatic Pro is normally $129.95, but when you use our exclusive offer code TWIT20, you'll save $20. Visit automatic.com/TWIT. That's automatic.com/TWIT for more information. And remember to use the offer code TWIT20 to save $20 off the regular purchase price. Again, that's automatic.com/TWIT. And we thank Automatic for their support of Know How. All right, let's get to it. You've seen everything on this table. In fact, this is a monitor from 3 years ago that I got for, even before I was doing know-how. Go figure. This is the monitor we took a look, the laptop that we took a look at on Thursday, the Acer Spin 7, a beautiful little convertible that's quite possibly the most elegant ultrabook that they put out there. Plus, it's a convertible. And of course, it has touch. Now, together, what they do is they create a system where I can have a Surface-like computer that gives me also the ability to undock and go portable. That's right. That monitor was being driven just by this one connection, which in that one connection, I have power, I have USB, and I have the connectivity to my monitor. Let me show you how it's going to work. This is a standard Windows 10 desktop. Right here, I've got a little Hutu. Again, we took a look at this last Thursday. This takes USB-C in. It has a port here so I can take my USB charger and plug it in. It has an HDMI port right here so I can get HDMI out up to 4K. And then this is a USB 3.0 port, which allows me to have access to the sensors, the touchscreen that's actually going to be on my monitor. Now, the nice thing about a USB system, and this is why I would suggest you use a laptop like the Spin 7, is because you have a single connection. In fact, I can stretch out this connection if I wanted to make it a little bit longer. I could use something like this, a USB-C extension cable, so I can put all of this in the rat's nest behind my monitor. This is actually going to be a know-how project in the future because I'm going to go ahead and build a little VESA mount that will take all the cables, including the adapters, the two power adapters, one for the monitor and one for USB-C, and mount them up in the back of this area. Now, once I have this connected, I just do this. One singular connection. It's going to give power to my laptop, so you just heard it chime a little bit. And as soon as it finds its connection here through the Hutu, it's going to go ahead and start sending HDMI through the back port here. Now, what you're going to get once you have this connected is you have an immediately dockable Surface. It is a touchscreen. So, for example, let's start up an app that you saw Leo play with. This is Sketchable. Now, people are going to say, oh, wait a minute. The advantage of having something like the Surface Pro is that it can turn into a drafting table. Well, this 3-year-old monitor can do that too. It's not as elegant. The hinge is not quite as nice, but it still works really well. And It's incredibly functional, incredibly responsive. I know there's also going to be people who say, well, the Surface has a pen and the Surface has a dial, but you can actually do that with this. We at IFA this year, Brian and I took a look at the products from Wacom. They have a bamboo stylus that will link via Bluetooth to your computer, and what it does is it gives you the precision of a pointer, but it also allows you to have the touch sensitivity, pressure sensitivity. So artists will know everything from how hard they're pushing on the tool to the angle at which the tool is laid, which gives you all of the really cool features that you want out of a drafting device. Now, Alex, if you switch to this input, you'll notice that, I mean, the response, it's as good as a Surface. In fact, it's better because this is a much higher spec computer than Leo's Surface. Leo's is an i5 with a spinning hard drive. This is an all SSD system. In fact, this is an M.2 SSD. It's really nice and fast. Plus, it's got an i7 processor with the same amount of memory. It's not just a pen. If I really, really wanted a knob, and honestly, I think Leo nailed this, the knob, the dial is a little bit of a gimmick right now. You could get something like this. This is a Griffin PowerMate. These sell for about $60. I've got a little a link here. They're not great on PC. They will work, but I find that I have to disconnect and reconnect a lot because they were really designed for people using OS X. Go figure. They have a Bluetooth version of that, but that really only works with Macs. They might write drivers for Windows if people are interested enough. So if you're looking for a dial, well, this is basically it. It works the exact same way. It doesn't have the touch sensitivity. In fact, if I put this on the screen, it can make the sensor go crazy because now it's getting multiple inputs at the same time. But if I just wanted a way to be able to control scrolling or zoom or undo, this works exactly the way as the dial. So right now I've got a $1,200 laptop, I've got a $500 monitor, and I've got maybe $100 worth of accessories, and I've got a Surface. And I've got something with a cool hinge that allows me to use it as a desktop or in drafting mode. Again, it's sliding on a Surface that's not ideal right now. It's not as elegant, but the wonderful thing about this is I can take my laptop and walk away. It's not as if I have to take the entire 28-pound desktop. This stays at home, and this comes with me. And because I'm using USB-C, I have the ability to combine all the different cables, all the different dongles into one. Even better is the fact that this monitor also acts as a USB 3.0 hub, which means that if I really want to, I can have things like my network adapter and my hard drives plugged into the back of this monitor. And as soon as I plug in the one cable that is on my laptop to this little Hutu, I have access to the monitor, I have video on the monitor, and I have access to my network. Now, one more thing that you could do with this, and this I really am enamored with, because this is a convertible, I could actually set this up so that this monitor is extended rather than mirrored. In other words, this could be a separate, smaller touch monitor that I use off to the side. Imagine that for an artist. This could be your main drafting surface. This could be where you store all your tools. So instead of having to flip through tools, you just touched it on this screen, and it's immediately accessible on this screen. There are some disadvantages to this. Of course, it's not as elegant. It's not as beautiful as a Surface. And also, the resolution is not even close. Remember, the Surface Studio is going to run you about 4.5K. It's just a gorgeous screen. This one is 1080p, and you can notice it. In fact, Alex, if you switch back to the side view here, yeah, you can see it. The color is the same. It's not the same. I mean, I know the angles are different here, but in person, it looks the same. This is rich and this is saturated. This is using the early version of IPS, so it's not quite as saturated. You do kind of get a little bit of a color fade. Now, they have a 2K version of this, and I believe they're going to be releasing a new 4K version of this that has a much nicer panel. But, of course, those are going to be more expensive. The 2K version is about $800 to $900, and I think the 4K version will probably go for about $1,200. But at $500, this is still a really, really good way for you to get Surface functionality for your non-Surface computer. Now, one more thing. We were often saying when we were doing the early reviews of the Surface that we would love the ability to take that monitor, that big monitor with the beautiful hinge with all that resolution, and connect it to a desktop so that I would always have something that's up to date. I would always have something that's powerful enough for me to do things like video editing. Well, if you go this route, that's not just a possibility. That's exactly what you're going to do. All right, we're going to be doing a bit more on this when we come back in Know How, and I've created a little rat's nest in the back. I want to see how sleek I can make it. I want to see if I can make the experience seamless. And I'm going to look at a couple of different USB-C accessories to see if I can make this whole package something that's even easy enough to use for my mom. But in the meantime, I thought what we should probably do is take a look at Leo's Surface, and if he'll let me tear it apart, let's go ahead and do an upgrade.
The Microsoft Surface Studio is a beautiful computer with an incredible screen and innovative mount. But over the last few weeks, one deficiency has become glaringly clear. The storage performance is wanting. The Studio uses a hybrid storage solution with a 1TB 5400 RPM spinning drive cached by a 64 or 128GB M.2 SSD. Benchmarking our base model with Crystal Disk Mark and a 50MB test file, we averaged about 100MB per second read and 90MB per second write, with a low of 8282 and a high of 135-118. That's just terrible, especially for a $3,000 to $4,000 computer. The benchmarks did go up as we tested larger and larger files because we hit the SSD cache more often, but in real-world use, no amount of caching makes a rotating drive perform close to even a budget SSD. So, an upgrade is in order. But we're not just going to replace the existing M.2 and SATA storage devices. We're going to reconfigure the Studio so it can use both independently, rather than using the M.2 to cache the SATA SSD. We're replacing the 64GB SanDisk M.2 with a 250GB Samsung 850 Evo, and the Seagate 1TB 5400RPM hard drive with a 960GB Kingston UV400 SSD. Neither of these SSDs are earth-shatteringly fast, topping out at about 540MB per second each. But as the Studio was limited by the Intel i5 CPU and 8GB of memory, we didn't feel the need to spend 30-60% more to get ultra-performance parts. Upgrading the drives on the Surface Studio isn't hard, but it does require the removal of 32 screws and bolts in about 50 steps. You don't need many tools for the upgrade. Some tweezers, a T8 and T6 Torx driver, a 5mm hex driver, some sort of nylon pry tool, and maybe a suction cup. We place the Surface Studio face down on a padded surface to get access to the base while protecting the screen. Disassembly starts by removing the four rubber feet on the underside of the Studio. Using a pair of tweezers, gently pry the feet up, making sure to keep the adhesive on each foot. These feet hide four Torx screws that bolt the cover to the underside of the base, two long screws towards the bottom, or the front of the computer, and two short screws towards the rear. There are a few internal clips that hold the cover to the base even once the screws are removed, but trying to pry it up might mar the case. Instead, use a suction cup or two to pull the cover straight out. To get to the M.2 and SATA bays, we need to remove the midframe, but you can't take out the midframe without first partially removing the fans. There are a total of five Torx screws that hold both fans to the midframe and the motherboard below. However, the fans are connected to the motherboard via sockets that are only accessible after the midframe has been removed. Once the fans are unmounted, let them hang loosely until you can access the connectors. The midframe is tied to the motherboard with four large Torx screws on the top right and left corners, and four small Torx screws around the perimeter of the midframe. Once you've removed all eight screws, gently pull out the midframe while holding the fans. Detach the connectors for the two fans and the speaker, and now the midframe, speaker, and fans should come free. Once the midframe is out, you have access to the M.2 bay. On our unit, a single Torx screw holds a 64GB SanDisk SSD into a standard socket that will work with any 80mm M.2 card. We're replacing the SanDisk with a 250GB Samsung 850 Evo, but you could get a multi-gigabyte per second part like the Kingston HyperX Predator or the Samsung 960 Pro. But again, considering what else is in this computer, it might look good on benchmarks, but it's probably not going to help the system overall. Replacing the Torx screw completes the M.2 upgrade. To get to the SATA bay, we're going to need to remove the cooling system. This is a little tricky because it's an irregular assembly with two heat sinks, heat pipes, and heat spreaders held to the motherboard with seven Torx screws and one mounting post. Start with the four screws in the center section. They're spring-clipped, so they can't be removed even after being unscrewed. Then there are three removable screws that mount a heat spreader on top of a processor. Finally, there's a single 5mm hex post above the main heatsink that is the last anchor of the cooling assembly. There's another above the secondary sink that doesn't hold the cooling assembly, but needs to be removed eventually, so we might as well get it while we have the hex driver out. With those screws and the posts removed, use a nylon spudger to gently rock the assembly off the CPU and GPU. If all has gone well, you should now have a clean shot at the SATA bay. This Surface Studio used a 1TB 5400 RPM Seagate hard drive held in a frame that is secured to the motherboard by three Torx screws and a post on the corner of the drive. We've already removed the post, so now we just need to remove the three Torx screws and the hard drive frame will be ready to unmount. Disconnect the SATA data and power lines, then remove the four Torx screws that hold the frame pieces to the drive itself, reinstalling them on the upgrade. The frame has four dampeners to reduce the vibration from a rotating drive. We don't need them anymore, but we're going to keep them just in case we need to return everything to factory spec so the unit can be serviced under warranty. Now, it's just a matter of putting everything back where we found it. Connect the SATA data and power connectors to the 2.5-inch SSD and remount the drive frame onto the motherboard with three Torx screws. Put the cooling assembly back and hold it in place with the four spring-loaded Torx screws, tightening each a little at a time in a crisscross pattern. Don't leave slack in the screws, but also don't over-tighten, as that could damage the components beneath. Re-secure the cooling assembly to the processor with three Torx screws, then replace the mounting post above the primary and secondary heat sinks. Reconnect the two fans to the motherboard. This is an easy step because each of the connectors is a different size and will only properly fit into its intended socket. Push the fans through the midframe, then snap the midframe back into place. Reconnect the speaker connector, then use five Torx screws to reinstall the fan assemblies into the midframe. Using the four large and four small Torx screws, anchor the midframe back into the case, then do a final tightening of all the screws, again making sure not to over-tighten. Snap the cover back into place, then using the remaining four Torx screws, secure it, remembering that the two short screws go up top and the two long screws attached at the bottom. Finally, replace the feet over the screw ports and reconnect power. You'll need to boot from your recovery media. If you've done everything right, and if you're using a fast USB 3.0 drive for your recovery reinstallation, you should have a fully reinstalled Windows 10 Pro operating system within 10 to 15 minutes. Now, for the fun part, the benchmarking. Remember that the original setup did not benchmark well, especially in the 50 MB test. With our new Surface SSD Studio, we benched about 540 MB per second read and 500 MB per second write. For those keeping score, that's a little bit faster.
Now, we did post some of this upgrade process on Twitter, and people have been sending me their benchmark screens. Specifically, there was one user who said he bought a mid-range Surface, and he was getting something like 1,300 write and 600, or 1,300 read and 600 write. Now, I could see how that can work, because we actually did show during this upgrade process that if you choose the larger files for the bandwidth test, for the write and the read test, you can get higher numbers. But the point is that a hybrid system, no matter how well engineered it is, no matter how fast that M.2 SSD might be, is always, always, always going to suffer because the primary source of data is off of a rotating drive. And as you've seen, a rotating drive is just ridiculously slow. The other thing about this upgrade is when I first proposed it, I gave Leo the top spec. We were going to go with a Savage, one of the wonderful HyperX drives from Kingston that is incredibly fast. But instead of getting that and, say, a 960 Pro, which would have been an M.2 drive that Leo used in the virtual reality gaming machine, we decided to go with something that was a bit more commensurate with the rest of the hardware inside that Surface. With an i5 processor with 8 gigabytes of memory, you're probably not going to be able to take advantage of a super, super fast M.2. Now, it would have looked great on benchmarking because I could have shown you 2 gigabits per second, gigabytes per second transfer, but it would have been dishonest. What we have now is a machine that's incredibly snappy and one that we didn't spend $1,000 to upgrade. The total price of this upgrade was somewhere closer to $300 to $400. Actually, much closer to three. Now, this is the Kingston UV400 that I used in there. We got this because this is just going to be data storage. Leo is like me. I know there's a lot of people who think that everything should be in one big pool of data, but I'm of the mind that why not have two drives? Why not have one that is dedicated for the operating system and another one that all it does is, it stores stuff. It stores video files. It stores photo files. For me, in my desktops, I have this particular one, the exact same one that I put into Leo's Surface Studio, a 960 gigabyte UV400, acts as my work drive. Anytime I'm working with assets with Adobe Premiere Pro, they get stored on this rather than the primary drive. This also gives me a cleaner path to rendering. So instead of going from my really fast M.2 into system memory, into the processor, back into that same M.2, I go straight from this SSD through the processor to my operating system drive or to my output SSD if I'm using that particular setup. This is a much cleaner way to get storage. It's a much cleaner way to get speed, and it means you get speed all the time because anytime you're using a cache system, it's going to be fast until it misses. And when the Surface Studio misses, it really, really misses. I'll say this. Anyone who keeps sending you snapshots of their benchmark screen showing you how fast their Surface Studio can be, ask them to send you screenshots of multiple tests at each level and across multiple file sizes, because what you're going to find out is that it will do exceptionally well when it hits, but when it misses, you're going to see the performance that we saw. Now, that's all the time we have for this episode of Know How. We've shown you what Leo thinks of the Surface Studio. I've shown you a little bit of how you can create your own Surface Studio. We're going to be coming back to that project as soon as I make it a bit more Know How ready. And we've shown you how to update your Surface Studio if you buy one and you love it, but you're just not enamored by that really slow hard drive. We thank you for joining us. And remember that Cranky Hippo should be back next week. And I know that because we pre-recorded the episode, and he's going to be with me heading off to CES.
I was sitting in my bedroom with my laptop, and I was playing Titanfall.
Well, thank you very much, Cranky Hippo. It's always so good to see you. Don't forget, folks, that if you want to find out what we did, in fact, I'm drawing up step-by-step instructions for the replacement of the drives of the SATA and the M.2 drive in a Surface Studio, you need to go to our show notes. You can find it at twit.tv/KH. That's twit.tv/knowhow. When you're there, you'll be able to find all of our episodes, including our back episodes. And if you click on each individual episode, there will be show notes attached to each one of those shows. It's also a really good place to subscribe if you want to make sure that you get all your know-how goodness each and every single week, be it us talking about 3D printers or networking or security cameras or upgrading a really expensive $3,000 to $4,000 computer. Again, twit.tv/KH and subscribe to your version of choice. Also, don't forget that we have a social media group on Google+. Just go to Google+ and look for know-how. Once there, you'll have to ask to join the group because I want to keep out all the spam accounts. But after a short approval process, you'll be in and have access to 10,000 plus Kitas. That's our know-it-alls. It's a great place to find new projects if you're looking for something to do in your spare time. Or if you're an expert, maybe you can help a newbie along so that we can spread the DIY and maker love. Finally, don't forget that you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/PadreSJ. That's a fantastic place if you want to find out what I'm doing when I'm not in the Twit TV studio. Like, for example, when Cranky Hippo and I are at CES doing our live events thing. And we also have another member of the team, Mr. Haley Grumble, I think. Haley
Grumble. Excuse me, Padre, that's pronounced Alex Gumpel.
No, I'm not going to go with that. But you can find him on Twitter at twitter.com.
The show is out of control.
/outofcontrol.com. No, twitter.com/ANELF3. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballasaire, just telling you that now you know how. Go speed it up.